hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope everybody is having a terrific Thursday today. And how are you doing today, Dad?
Awesome. I got some commentary to make for you guys, and I was trying to pull a few articles on it that I had referenced in the past, and I'm going to go ahead and just, I can't find the articles. I just thought about doing this about 30 minutes ago. I've been digging and I can't find them. So I'm going to give them to you from memory because I had the dates and the names and the places and the times and everything else. But it goes back to the 1920s when the Rothschild boys that had set up our Federal Reserve System basically said they completely controlled world events, and they controlled both sides of the narrative. And because they control both sides of the narrative, the narrative there basically, as these guys say in the Middle East, the Far East, and you know, we learn in karate, they call it the yin and the yang, or the positive and the negative. And that's what they do. They control every side of every story in order to control the outcome and to push world events in the direction they want to push them. Now, this is what's happening with China. This is what's happening with Germany. This is what's happening with Russia. All of these events are being controlled. This is what's happened with Trump. Now, I'm going to read you an article here out of the Wall Street Journal in just a second. It's going to blow your mind about what happened with Trump and the collusion before the election and how they're actually seeing now that he was set up from the beginning. And quite frankly, the Rothschilds are controlling him in both directions to make sure he does what they want him to do. And that's basically from the Zionist standpoint would be the Greater Israel program. And also, you know, the world dominion of the folks that are the Zionists and the bringing in of the temple and the Antichrist and everything else, which is going to bring in Armageddon, which is what they want. And now we have other groups of people around the planet who don't want everybody to be killed. Imagine that. So what we're doing is we're in a situation that we're being drawn and pushed back and forth. Let me give you a couple examples real quick. You know, Trump right now has got this thing going on with the trade wars, and now he's backed out of the trade war with China. And I kind of had a revelation about the trade war with China a little bit today because, you know, they backed off of that. Austin and I covered about the, you know, Austin did the research on it about how much money we're actually going to save with the automobile industry with the lowering of the tariffs of the cars that we send over there. It's only a few billion dollars a year. But China carries a lot of our debt, Austin. They carry literally over $1 trillion in, you know, in bond purchases and basically notes, yeah, from our federal government. They're really capable of dumping those notes on the market anytime they want and completely wiping out the United States currency, just making these notes absolutely worthless. And Trump knows that. So Trump's backed out of the thing with Russia or China basically because he's putting the United States in an undeclared Chapter 11 style bankruptcy. That's what he's trying to do. He's trying to manage us out of this bankruptcy state. He doesn't want to file Chapter 7 and have everybody come in and take our stuff, but he's trying to make us solvent enough to start getting solvent enough in the international trade arena to try to put the country back together again. But he's having people who are upset about that because the United States is the largest debtor nation on the planet. So what's happening is the United States is revolting against the international system that's looted it on behalf of the global oligarchs, primarily the Rothschilds and other organized crime families. Another way of saying it is the world is negotiating a replacement for the petrodollar system. This is what's going on right now as we're watching this happening. Now, what we can see is we have this massive blow up now, and it splits now between the leaders of Germany, France, the European Union, calling for end of the post-war European-American alliance. We've seen this now with Germany wanting to buy directly from basically the Ukrainian gas at a much reduced price. Trump's saying, no, we don't want you to do that, Germany. We want you to pay us, the Ukrainian, get our gas from us through the Middle East through petrodollars at a 20% premium. And Germany's saying, you know, why would we do this? See, this most important threat basically seen in public has been to the U.S. as opposed to sanctions against Germany if they proceed with the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. This pipeline would allow Germany to import gas directly from Russia instead of having to go through the Khazarian, the basically puppet state of the Ukraine. In essence, Trump is saying, if you don't buy gas from us at a 20% markup, we're going to stop buying your cars, which would be the Mercedes, the Porsche, the Volkswagens, et cetera, or put huge tariffs on them. So this is what's going on right now in the world. Now, Germany doesn't have all these bonds and all this stuff owed to them by the Federal Treasury, so they don't have the ability to do what China did and say, hey, we're going to dump all of our petrodollars, we're going to dump all of these T-bills and all of these Treasury bills, and you guys can deal with the blowback and all of that. So China's basically, you know, called Trump's hand on it. However, Germany right now doesn't know what to do because they really want to continue to buy cheap gas because they heat primarily with gas over there in the wintertime, and it's extremely, extremely cold. Now, we have to realize that the Rothschilds basically are controlling a lot of people that worship him through Zionism, and through all of these people, these evangelicals who have sold out completely to Zionism. And the Orthodox Christians are saying, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense to any of us. Why are you guys doing all that? So this is a problem that we've run into in the United States right now. We have two sets of the, how should I say, the satanic sides fighting against each other, but both sides of the satanic sides appear to be controlled by the Rothschild banking cartel, which it seems as though they're the ones that are trying to do the entire global world system right now. Now, you have to understand, this satanic globalist cabal basically don't know what to do, because General Haskell was now confirmed the CIA director, which I think was a horrible mistake. Trump has also signed an executive order. He wants to release unredacted documents to Congress. The documents say the Department of Justice Inspector General is also about to lower the boom on all these different crimes that are taking place around the planet. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on right now that I don't really talk about because it changes daily. And guys, we just have to be and realize that we have to just pray about who and what's in charge of this planet, who and what's doing all of this stuff. Because guys, this is a major, major problem right now in the United States with this petrodollar. Let me put it to you this way. The United States is insolvent. Congress is unwilling to do anything about the insolvency. The first thing we'd have to do is to basically declare null and void all of the bills and all of the receipts and all of the money owed to the Rothschild banking cartel. I would personally make them responsible for all of the T-bills they sold in the name of the U.S. Treasury to finance their fiat currency and put it back on them, because they're basically worth quadrillions of dollars. So I'd make them pay back China and all these other notes. But they're not going to do that. They're going to retreat to Switzerland, where they're based out of with the Bank of International Settlements, and they'll do whatever they want to do to stay there, and there'll be no recompense for them. So the reality is it leaves us holding a whole bunch of credit card debt, which we are called our national debt, that the United States simply doesn't know how to pay off. And then with Congress unwilling to balance the national budget and unable to balance the national budget, and here's why. If you balance the national budget, what ends up happening is that you don't run into deficit spending. You stop borrowing from the criminal cartel that caused all of this. If we stop borrowing $1 trillion a year from the Rothschild banking cartel, and we start paying back the money that we borrowed from these guys, and we cut back on our budget, what happens is the money that we pay back to them has never been printed. It's the interest. So it contracts the M1 money supply, which means there's no money to continue basically buying goods and selling goods, etc., and you have the AIG scenario multiplied by 1,000 all over the planet with a contraction of the M1 money supply. The M1 money supply is the amount of currency in circulation. And so what's happened is this. The Rothschild banking cartel knows this. They know that they never print enough money to pay all of the interest on all of the debts, and if we try to pay off the interest on the debt, we run out of money. That's why every time in this current economy with the Rothschild banking cartel, Nixon did it and Clinton did it. When you balance the budget, get close to balancing the budget, you start to liquidate, you start to basically cash out the money supply, and you put your country into recession almost immediately. Let me give you another example, and I've done this before, I'm going to do it again for the new listeners. If I decide to come in with a business partner, and I hire Bill Gates, who I would never do because he's a complete total scoundrel, and I said, let's go buy the island of Grenada. We bought the entire island of Grenada, and then I said to Bill Gates, we need currency in Grenada. I do not want to use U.S. dollars. I don't want to be borrowing the money from the Rothschilds. So he says, that's okay. I'm going to go ahead and loan you $10 billion. We're going to put up the island of Grenada as collateral. And what we're going to do, I'm going to charge you 7.2% on the interest that we're paying on the money. I'm going to give you $10 billion. So he prints up $10 billion with Bill Gates' little picture on it. And so Bill Gates basically says, okay, here's the money. So I go in and I work on roads and plant and equipment and all the stuff that we're doing. And we got the economy humming in Grenada. Well, at the end of 10 years, by the rule of 7.2% interest, I now owe $10 billion in interest money on top of the $10 billion that I borrowed. This is what the national debt's done with the Federal Reserve Bank. And all of a sudden I say to Bill Gates, I want to pay you this money back, but I only have $10 billion that was put into circulation. I owe you another $10 billion, which means now that I don't owe you $10 billion anymore, I owe you $20 billion, but there's only $10 billion in circulation. And Bill Gates says, no, 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 it doesn't matter. I'll loan you another $10 billion. So then you'll owe me $20 billion plus the $10 billion. So now you'll owe me $30 billion. And now on the $30 billion in another 10 years, you'll owe me $60 billion. This is what they've done to us, guys. And so no matter what we do, if we come in and we try to pay off the debt, all the money that we have in circulation is gone because it's all spent on interest, and then there's no money to buy or sell or have any commerce. This is Babylonian money magic. It disappears. It goes away. So the only way you can increase the M1 money supply, the only way you can maintain the economy, is you have to continue to borrow more and more money every single year. This is why fiat currencies always go to zero, because sooner or later it bankrupts the country. The United States is in Chapter 11 bankruptcy right now. We are insolvent. The national debt that we owe cannot be paid back. It's over $100 trillion with Social Security trust fund liabilities, not even to mention the quadrillions of dollars that are in U.S. currency and derivatives. It's no way to pay it back. That's why Congress doesn't care about balancing the budget. That's why Congress can't balance the budget, because once they balance the budget, the money starts coming back out of circulation. Back when AIG happened in 2007, 2008, we only had about $1 trillion in actual cash that was in circulation around the world. That was it. $1,000 billion. That was it. $1 trillion. And all of a sudden, there wasn't enough money to meet all of the obligations and all of the derivatives and all the bets and all the insurance policies that AIG had put out. And they started end up paying out, and there wasn't enough money to pay them out. That's why we had to throw, another $100 billion into that mess immediately to get AIG solvent, which is a tenth of the money supply, which turned around and bid us. You know, I think it wasn't $100 billion. Gosh, it was much more than that. And the thing that's so crazy about that is that this is what we've been doing now with quantitative easing. They don't want to call it turning the money presses on wide open until they break down. That's not what they want to call it. They're basically calling it quantitative easing. Now we put trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars into the M1 money supply since 2008, which means gold at this point, if our money supply is 10 times what it was, which is much higher than that now, by the way, than it was in 2008, gold being the standard of measure should be 10 times what it was. It should be like 8,000 an ounce now, minimum. That's minimum. But because Rothschild set the currency standards and exchange currency rates every day on the New York Stock Exchange and all the comics, because they basically don't settle in gold anymore. They settle in cash. They print more money to pay people off in cash and not gold. They've been able to suppress the markets in precious metals. This is where we are in the United States, fiscally insolvent, bankrupt, Chapter 11. Trump's trying to negotiate a favorable Chapter 11 payback. That's what this is. And now he's getting all this pushback from all these different countries, because remember, China wants to chop us up in little pieces. The Rothschild banking cartel, they'd just soon chop it up in little pieces just to look at us. The only reason we're even here anymore is that we are their military arm of their new world order that allows them at this point to go in and rob and rape and pillage any country they want with our United States military armed forces. That's why we're not basically in the ash heap of being sold off in chunks. That's the only reason, is because of our military. So guys, this is what's going on right now in the new world order. Trump's basically a pawn in the game, as are we, in which these international banking cartels, under the auspices of Lucifer himself with this Babylonian money magic that they've been doing with the Druids, and probably this was all taught to them by the fallen angel stuff they did back in the 6th chapter of Genesis, same thing they did to Rome. This is what's going on. And this is what's been going on for thousands and thousands of years as they bankrupt one economy, take over another economy, set up another central bank, set up another reserve currency, on forth and onward, onward, onward they go until they collapse everything and they start over again with someone else. This is what they do with their International Bank of Settlements, their Basel, their commerce thing in Basel, Bank of International Settlements. And what the crazy thing is that this is also what they do was sending people in, these economic hitmen that go in and they mortgage these countries for huge amounts of money to take their natural resources away, which is what we talked about with Paul Williams 2 weeks ago, or I think it was a week ago, I can't, like 2 weeks ago, we talked about with Paul Williams, who wrote the new book with Rodney, that basically these economic hitmen go in to take natural resources, the gold, the silver, the copper, everything else, because that's what they want to control, because those are real assets. Those are not fiat currency. Those are real tangible assets that can be sold and have intrinsic values. Now, I just want to give you a little bit of history background on what's going on with the trade deals, what's going on with Germany, what's going on with the gas pipeline, why Trump, in my opinion, capitulated with China, and why all of this stuff is happening right now as we speak. Austin, what do you think, and what's your next story?
Yeah, that was a great breakdown, man. And I just pulled it up here. Yeah, in 2008, we spent right at $700 billion on the books for the bailout, which basically came down to $4,635 for every single working American, as that's what they sold as far as the debt on our heads for $700 billion for that bailout. So it coincides exactly what you were just talking about, Dad, is the cash wasn't there in circulation. There's no way they could bail these guys out without taking a larger loan. Now, speaking of natural resources and us consistently trying to go into countries to capitalize and steal their natural resources, President Trump has now come out today and has canceled the upcoming June 12th summit with North Korea dictator Kim Jong-un. The White House issued a letter to Kim on Thursday. Now, before I read this all the way, I said this on the Hagmann Show, I said it again last week, and I was pretty confident when I said it, is that we're never going to allow any type of peace to occur with North Korea. We didn't care what they do. We are going to have to make them the boogeyman. Regardless of what they do, they're getting blamed for something because they sit on too many natural resources. Numerous South Korean mining companies have already come into North Korea in the past and estimated anywhere from $6 to $10 trillion in natural resources, from diamonds to gold to silver to iron to copper, you name it, North Korea is sitting on a gold mine. They know it. The rest of the world, well, not the rest of the world, a large percentage of the world knows it, at least the globalists do, and they never want North Korea to basically chill out. They want to continue this rhetoric going so they can consistently make North Korea the bad guy, which will give us a pretext for an invasion. And the letter, I'm not going to read you the whole letter here, which basically was given to Kim Jong-un today, and Trump goes in and basically says a few things on here. And then this is the part that I thought was ironic because, you know, we obviously already know we're the military powerhouse of the world, even with our nuclear weapons that we apparently found out yesterday we can't even build them anymore, afford to build them anymore, which I thought was ironic. And the weaponry we have, like the F-22 and the F-35 fighter jets and everything else we have, it says in here, this is from Trump, he says, sadly, based on the tremendous anger and open hostility displayed in your most recent statement towards the United States, I feel it is inappropriate and at this time to have this long-planned meeting. Therefore, please let this letter serve to represent that the Singapore summit for the good of both parties, but to the detriment of the world, will not take place. You talk about your nuclear capabilities, but ours are so massive and so powerful that I pray to God they will never have to be used. If you change your mind having to do with the most important summit, please do not hesitate to call me or write. The world and North Korea in particular has lost a great opportunity for lasting peace, prosperity, and wealth. The missed opportunity is truly a sad moment in history. Sincerely yours, Donald J. Trump. Now, the whole reason why this is going on, and I've noticed this from the media, the mainstream media, is they're coming out now and they're saying, well, North Korea is using this as an excuse. They wanted us to cancel it. They did this. They did that. Whatever the reason may be. We are the bigger kid on the block. We are the ones that have the significantly stronger military force, and we know good and well what North Korea is sitting on with their essentially gold mine of natural resources. And it's interesting because remember I told you guys last week, North Korea had already threatened to cancel the upcoming event. Then on Thursday, North Korea has claimed now that it has dismantled and destroyed its own nuclear testing site. North Korea said, though, it was threatened and wanted to cancel the summit if the U.S. was going to continue unlawful and outrageous acts. And this is exactly what they were referring to last week when I called the U.S. out. The North Koreans said last week they felt threatened because South Korea and U.S. were conducting military exercises in practice for an invasion of North Korea. They said the U.S. planned a military exercise with B-52 bombers alongside South Korean warplanes last week. North Korea said that the drills between the U.S. and South Korean Air Force were a rehearsal for an invasion of the North and a provocation amidst warming inter-Korean ties. So, of course, as I said on the Hagmann Show and before, I did not think this was going to go over smoothly. I had no really no expecting of this going down. I really was hopeful for it. I really wanted this to settle down, but that will be the next country that we blame a false flag on, in my opinion, in order to invade them so we can go in and do a full hostile takeover. We can put a puppet regime in. We can liberate North Korea and bring democracy and freedom to North Korea, as we always like to say every time we invade a country, kill their inhabitants, and take over their natural resources. North Korea is on the chopping block. Mark my word on it, guys. We have to get their natural resources, just like we've done all over the Middle East, just like we've done all throughout Africa, just like we've done in pretty much every single country we have invaded. So I was sad to see that today, but I was not surprised at all that Trump came out and blatantly canceled this summit for June 12th, Deb.
Well, you know, Trump wanted to pull out of Syria. And instantaneously, yeah, basically, they have another false flag that was probably Mossad.
Yeah.
A few months ago, remember, we had a missile launch, supposedly, towards Hawaii that was shot down by some unknown source. And Kim Jong-un basically figured out real quick that if he did this any longer, that he was going to lose his country, because we were going to blame that on him. That's because, remember, he has submarines that are capable of launching those. But what we forgot is that Israel has been sold a whole bunch of submarines by Germany, which also have the capability of launching those types of weapons. And Robert David Steele came on the show and basically said that he felt that Israel, the Mossad, had launched those missiles towards Hawaii. And quite frankly, you know, the Mossad, Israel, the Rothschild fiefdom, the Rothschild banking cartel, they're pretty much directing world events. So Trump says he wants to go ahead and have a peace treaty signed with North Korea instantaneously within a week or two. We start doing military drills with South Korea to invade North Korea, just to basically get in his face again to stop the peace summit. So not only did the Syria war not end, and not only now is that pump was going to be, you know, he's going to be, you know, the Times Magazine's Man of the Year for Peace, you know, get the Nobel Peace Prize and all that kind of stuff. Why? Because of this thing with North Korea. Now all of a sudden that's come to an end. Why? Because Trump steps out and tries to get things done, and quickly he gets snatched back by the golden ring in his nose and said, hey, no, we're your Rothschild masters. We paid off a bunch of your billions of dollars in debts back in the 80s. We basically have your casinos and all the other things that you currently own financed, and we own the paper on those, and you owe us. Again, the Bible's right. The borrower is servant to the lender. And so, again, as far as I'm concerned, Trump's turned into a Zionist proxy. He's being led around by the nose, as, you know, was said on our show a few weeks ago by Paul Williams, by Benjamin Netanyahu, who's being led around by the nose by the Rothschilds, who's being led around by the nose by Lucifer. You think, well, that sounds weird, Ted. Did I say to you that I didn't think that sounds weird? I think that sounds nuts. But that's the only thing that makes any sense with the satanic sacrifice and all the other crazy things that are going on. Here's an article from the Wall Street Journal, May the 18th, 2018. I'll read you part of this. It's a pretty interesting article, and you need to read it. It's in the opinion section. It says House it's by Kimberly Strasser. It says House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes appeared on Fox and Friends Tuesday, where he provided a potentially explosive hint at what's driving his demand to see documents related to the Federal Bureau of Investigation's Russian probe. If the campaign was somehow set up, he told the host, I think that would be a problem, or an understatement. Mr. Nunes is still getting stiff-armed by the Justice Department over his subpoena. But this week, his efforts did force the stunning admission that the FBI had indeed spied on the Trump campaign. This came in the form of a Thursday New York Times apology in which the government officials acknowledged that the Bureau had used at least one human informant to spy on with both Carter Page and George Papadopoulos. The Times slipped this mind-bending fact into the middle of an otherwise glowing profile of the Noble Bureau and dismissed it as no big deal. But there's more to be revealed here, and Mr. Nunes' setup comment points into certain direction. Getting to the conclusion requires thinking more broadly about the events beyond the FBI's actions. Think of the 2016 Trump-Russian narrative as two parallel strands. One politics, one law enforcement. The political side involves the action of Fusion GPS, the Hillary Clinton campaign, and Obama officials, all of whom were focused on destroying Donald Trump. The law enforcement strand involving the FBI and what methods and evidence it used in this Trump investigation. At some point, these strands intersected. And one crucial question is, how early did that happen? Guys, Trump got set up from the beginning by the Hillary campaign and Obama campaign using the Justice Department. You can read this in the Wall Street Journal, the May 18th, this is a couple weeks ago, last week, opinion article, Potomac Watch by Kimberly A. Strassel. My private email list with you guys, I've sent this to you already, but I want you guys to read this and just understand that it is all coming to a head, that Donald Trump was indeed set up, because remember, the Rothschild banking cartel wanted Hillary Clinton in, because Hillary Clinton was the one who basically was going to push in their new world order and take the guns away from the people here in the United States. But they also had to hedge their bets in the event that Donald Trump got in, that they would have trash on him that they could use against him if he became elected to control him. That's exactly what's happened. That's exactly what's happened. And guys, what a mess it's been for Donald Trump for the past year and a half with this stupid Mueller investigation going on and on into nauseam. And it's sad that a sitting president of the United States is having to deal with all of this political intrigue, Justice Department intrigue, and Rothschild banking cartel involvement in what should have been a great, great presidency with Donald Trump helping to make America great again, trying to get rid of the New World Order, which has turned into another puppet regime controlled by the Rothschild banking cartel, with Donald Trump becoming another political Zionist and going around and doing whatever he's told to do by the Rothschild banking cartel. This is what it's turned into. And it saddens me to no end that this has happened and that we did not get a president in there who was able to do what I was hoping that he was able to do. Austin, what do you think?
Yeah, it is disappointing, man. And the problem is, it seems like it doesn't really matter who gets in the office anymore. These guys own so many politicians, they own so many lobbyists, and they own so many people in the deep state that it's just, and Trump called it from the beginning. He said it's a swamp. He goes, we have to drain the swamp. And he knew it. He knew what he was walking into to an extent. But I don't think he ever anticipated what level of swamp, nasty, green, algae, gator, moccasin filth he was going to have to be wading into chest deep when he actually walked into the real swamp. And that's what we see having going on. Like you just said, he talked about pulling out of Syria. All of a sudden, Mathis and everybody go, what are you talking about? We're not pulling out of Syria. Week later, chemical weapons attack, supposedly. Assad used chlorine gas. Really? You don't have any evidence of that? Again, oh, doesn't matter. We have to bomb them again. Oh, we got everything going on with North Korea. Oh, nope. We have to start doing a war exercise right on their coast again to show them how big and strong we are after they've already submitted and said they're getting rid of their nuclear weapons. They already said they want to meet us in June 12th. They already said they basically want to handle this and get it rectified. They're already submitting to the United States. Oh, that's not good enough. We can do a full-blown mock military invasion with B-52 bombers right over their border, buzzing around them all weekend long to show them just how serious we are. I mean, golly, I mean, what else do we really want North Korea to do? We want us to sit there and just say, okay, yes, master, whatever you want, you guys pretend to invade us, even though, you know, we know you're about to invade us, we'll act like you're not going to do that. That's exactly what's going on here, and it really is sad to me. Also, too, other news, this is actually pretty interesting news. This is a firearms topic of defensive aspects. I like to bring these up here and there just to kind of give you guys my take on it. Yesterday, a dad holding his toddler daughter was walking back to his car outside of a McDonald's in Memphis, Tennessee, when police said four men attacked him. They jumped out of their car and started fighting with him, trying to take his wallet and his cell phone. He fought back. He ended up dropping his child on the concrete, who was later found to be unharmed, and basically had to start fighting four guys while the child was sitting on the concrete screaming. He was able to reach into his car and grab his handgun, fired four shots, hitting one of the assailants once. The suspects then jumped back in their black Infiniti. Minutes later, police found the car at a Memphis fire station where the suspects went to help their wounded comrade. And so this is something that, you know, this guy managed to get out of it. First off, these guys, in my opinion, alongside a lot of other people in the world, have a special place in hell. When you take four people strong and you basically go jump on somebody that's carrying their little child back to their car. I mean, you got to be a real worthless sack of crap to engage somebody like that, to steal their stuff on that level of basically a unbalanced, unfair fight. I mean, it's bad enough when you're doing home invasions and you're breaking into people's houses and everything else. You see somebody walking back into their car holding their child, their little innocent child, and you jump out and basically try to mug them. However, this guy, he was blessed. He did have a firearm, but he had it in his car. Now, the aspect of what I want to bring up here is, A, he should have been carried concealed. I pretty much always carry a concealed pistol on me anytime I'm out of the house. I rarely ever leave the house without a firearm. Why? Because I've seen too much of this stuff. I live down here in Florida. It's gotten wild down here. I have a lot of friends who are in law enforcement. I've just, Dad and I have both seen stuff. Don't want to be involved in something like that. Second tip I would give this guy, and I'm very, very careful about this because I have two kids now, and I try to focus on this all the time because of a prior drill that basically was forced into my head where I had to carry a baby carrier while drawing and shooting from cover while retreating. Anytime you're carrying a child and you're carrying a concealed weapon, you need to make sure you mentally carry that child with the opposite arm that you normally draw with. For example, if you're right-handed and you carry your firearm on your side or on your hip on your right side, you need to make sure you carry your child or the baby seat or the carrier with your left arm. You don't want to be in a position where you're carrying your child, holding them with your right arm, and you have to drop them immediately to try to even use any defensive manners to get your firearm unholstered. Now, is that going to fix the situation all the time? Absolutely not. Just a few tips from me from what I have seen personally and from reading this article that I always try to make sure I can convey to everybody. So if you're carrying concealed, make sure you always do your best to leave that strong hand, your draw hand, available to use it as much as possible, because in most cases, you're still going to have to drop the child regardless, but you can use that other arm immediately to basically put the child down and then defend yourself or push them off while you're in the process of drawing your weapon. So just a few little tips from what I saw with this, but I'm glad this guy basically was able to defend himself and his child from these, basically these just, no, I'm not even going to say anything about it. Basically a bunch of people that need to be back in jail, which I'm glad they are now.
Well, yeah. By the way, Italy, new populist coalition government is now pledging to deport 500,000 immigrants. Wow. The Five Star Movement and the League formed a coalition government that pledges to support these illegal immigrants. Italy has been inundated with migrants due to its proximity to North Africa. Remember, this is exactly what Gaddafi said would happen. You take me out, they're going to flood into Europe. I'll stop it as long as I'm president here. And he did. The migrants have failed to assimilate and are a drain on the native population and continue to roam in gang-raping barbarian hordes. And basically, it's crazy. So I really hope that these migrants can be shipped out of Italy. I really hope that we end up getting, you know, this stuff taken care of and that these guys are brought to justice. Also, the alleged spy in the Trump campaign was paid over $1 million by the Department of Defense. This is Stephen Hopper. He's been on the news about the last week. I really haven't brought up a lot of information on because you guys have seen it in other sources. He's the alleged informant or the mole in the Trump's campaign. He received more than $1 million from 2012 to 2016 from the Department of Defense. He was basically on the CIA payroll. Instead of appointing a second special counsel to investigate the spy case against Trump, Rob Rosenstein referred the case to Inspector General Horowitz, who lacks the power to subpoena. Additionally, Horowitz is not authorized to press criminal charges, but may only turn the case back over to the Department of Justice if he finds wrongdoing. Now, this Stephen Hopper was interesting. He worked as a banker through the Rothschild organization to funnel money from the Contras into Switzerland for payments back to these people running guns and drugs under the Reagan campaign with the CIA. This guy is as dirty as it gets. And guys, when this thing gets shown up for what it is, this is a Clinton, Soros, Obama campaign to do everything they could to destroy the Donald Trump run for the presidency with any dirty trick they possibly could find, including through the Department of Defense paying this guy over $1 million while Obama was president. Guys, this is a bunch of mess. I tell you what, it's almost hard to believe that, you know, this is going on and on and on in our country, but it's showing the people in the United States just how deep the swamp is. Like Austin said, when Trump waded out into the swamp, he didn't realize the bottom was filled with quicksand, and he's doing everything he can not to get sucked under right now. So, unbelievable mess. Also, France, a dozen teenagers now who have been basically have had enough of these migrants in France, have brutally killed a migrant citizen in broad daylight. I'm not saying that's okay. A group of dozens, because I think it's wrong. You've got a dozen teenagers beat a man to death in broad daylight in a high crime urban area where many migrants reside in southern France. The victim was a 32-year-old drug dealer who was known to be violent and migrated to Africa from to France from West Africa. It is unknown whether the children were migrants. They averaged the age for 12 to 14 years of age, and three of them had been arrested. So they beat the guy to death for being a drug dealer on the street. So guys, this again is that giant cultural clash that I've talked about so many times. Certain religions don't mix well together. They don't mix. Okay? They just simply don't mix. And when you bring people in who, like they say in this article, have refused to assimilate and become part of the existing culture that's already there, it makes it very, very difficult for the indigenous population, especially if they're already rowdy to begin with, to put up with a lot of the nonsense. So sadly, guys, beat this guy to death, but tell you what, if he's a drug dealing immigrant who basically didn't want to assimilate, who's probably taking a bunch of these kids down the wrong road as far as with drugs, it's sad, but things like that happen to people who do things like that. Austin, what do you think?
It is, and I mean, it's the aspect that you have to look at it from is a total level of lawlessness as far as where are these kids going to start progressing in life after they've done this. Are they that aggressive and that belligerent and that violent that they're basically going to continue the same way? I don't know. And one aspect that a lot of people don't understand this in, you know, Dad and I have traveled all over the country. I was blessed at a young age. We were able to go on a lot of places during the summer, and I was also homeschooled, so we went on different vacations, different trips, and, you know, places all over the place when I was younger. And one thing that a lot of people don't understand is that when, and this is just, there's no, you can't get mad about this. This is just a simple fact. If you take somebody that lives, say, in the middle of Egypt or someplace in Africa, and they basically live in a mud hut, and they're used to basically fighting people with machetes and AK-47s just to try not to stay, not to get killed or to get eaten or to get mugged or to get raped. And this is what they do on a regular basis for most of their foreseeable life, and this is their lifestyle. And then all of a sudden you take that person out of that environment and you put them into a very, very high-class first world country like, say, Paris, France, and you drop them in the middle of it, essentially almost overnight, and give them free money, give them free housing, and then say, well, also, too, while you're here, you need to assimilate and you need to behave. You're in France, you need to act like you're in Europe. And they kind of look at each other and go, Europe? Behave? What are these words you speak of? I don't know such thing. I know how to live exactly the way I've lived for the last 10, 15, 20, 30 years, and that is basically to fight and to kill anything and everybody that can possibly even come close to being a threat to me. And that's what we see now, and it's just like Dad said, when you take people from that culture, especially when they have a very militant Muslim background, where it already says if anybody basically doesn't assimilate with your Muslim culture, they're infidels and you need to kill them, you breed even more hatred and more anger. And then you dump these people in the middle of a first world city and tell them to assimilate and respect one another, it's not going to happen. You can live in all the fairy world you want. You can sprinkle all the fairy dust you want on them. It's not going to change anything. Nothing's going to get better. And the longer it stays like that, the worse it's going to get. Perfect example of what we've seen in downtown Paris, of what we've seen in Italy, of what we see over in Germany, of what we see in the UK, where they have some of the worst knifings and stabbing rates now in the entire world in the UK. I mean, there's people getting gutted and knifed and macheted and razor bladed every single day in London now, in UK, okay. All over the place now. Yes. I mean, it's worse than even the worst areas in the United States. They have the worst crime over there now with beatings and knifings. Because why? They've taken all the guns away. Well, even the criminals don't even have guns. They've taken so many guns away. So what do they resort to? They resort back to their barbaric aspects of fighting, which is knives, swords, spears, stabbing weapons, clubs. That's what it always resorts back down to when everything goes primitive. That's what they go back to. The only way you could prevent this is to start allowing the UK citizens or the EU citizens that were born in the EU, they are citizens there, they have lived there, they did not migrate there, and you start allowing them to take tactical handgun classes, to carry concealed firearms, and learn offensive and defensive fighting alongside gunfighting. That is the only way this would stop. And I promise you, you start having groups of UK citizens and Europe citizens running around fully armed, and they see these militant migrants coming in with baseball bats, with knives, with stabbing weapons, and they come in these huge groups, and all of a sudden, 2, 3, 4, 5 of these UK boys pull out Glock 17s and start unloading on them when they feel their life is threatened, I can guarantee you with full certainty that it would calm those boys down real quick and also reduce the amount of violent crimes, including knifings, that are going on over there, because then it's not much fun to knife somebody when you're going to get shot. That's the aspect. Right now, there is no downside. Majority of the people in the UK don't know how to do proper knife fighting. They don't know how to defend against knife fights. So they're just getting gutted and knifed on the street, and they don't have any defensive measure except call the police, and in most cases, the police don't even care. They'll show up 10, 20, 30 minutes down the line and write a report and then go back to whatever they're doing. Because why? The cops don't want to get knifed either, because majority of them aren't armed to any extent either anymore, Dad. And that is what has happened in Europe, and it's not by chance. It is by complete and total control, because that is what happens when you allow a government to fully disarm its population. You're at the submission of whatever they want to allow in the country and whatever they want to allow to be done to you.
Excellent. Awesome. Years ago, I was a college professor in Tallahassee back in 1981 and 1982. In the last year, they also had me teaching some classes at the Federal Correctional Institute in Tallahassee at that point, which was an all-men's prison. And now I think it's a women's prison now. And I drive out there and I have to go through all these security checks to go in and go out. I mean, like multiple gates, multiple bars, multiple stuff, really weird. I'm walking in with a briefcase. I got to look at my briefcase. I mean, it's one of those things that went into a prison. I was told that I could not take any stuff from any prisoner at any time that I could leave the compound with, other than like homework to grade or something like that. And I remember one time one of the guys asked me to take a letter out for him to one of his friends or one of his girlfriend, and I told him I couldn't do it. He got all mad. And then one time I remember, I was in this one classroom, and we were in the, and the cops weren't in there with me. The guards weren't in there with me. And they said, if anything happens in the classroom, in other words, if you get attacked, just pick up the telephone and we'll be here within 30 to 40 seconds. And I looked at the guy and I said, do you realize how much can happen within 30 to 40 seconds? I said, fights don't really last more than 30 or 40 seconds.
No.
And he goes, I said, I could be gutted and on the floor and dead, you know, with a shift in me. I said, people don't, you know, this is just not something that's okay. I said, you know, you need to have a little better security. And sure enough, I had one of the doggone guys who was in there for some felony jump up and start screaming at me one day because he got a bad score on a test, which I quickly learned that you don't give these guys bad test grades. And, of course, I quickly also learned that was my last semester teaching out there. And I remember I thought to myself, this is crazy. I said, it's going to take 30 or 40 seconds for this guy to basically calm his little butt down. But in the meantime, I didn't flip up the phone because some of the other guys in the class, you know, they thought I was a pretty cool professor. And so I got it all calmed down. But then I immediately told the professor, the security guys, that I wanted this guy out of my class now. And they did. They took him out of the class. I never saw him again. But from that point on, there was a huge courtyard in the middle of this Federal Correctional Center. I had to walk through the courtyard to get to the teaching classrooms. It was the size of, probably bigger than a football field. And I just, I'm clueless, man. I'm just walking through there for the first 6 months, or I'm teaching up there or whatever. I'm not getting any security escort. I'm just walking through everything. I'm like, well, I'm a big guy. I'm okay. I don't care. After that, I told him, I said, I am not walking through your compound again with Bobo breath running around out here, you know, not locked up and solitary with me here. I said, I want security escort back and forth every single time. And I finished the semester. I really did, because I had signed a contract to finish this teaching out there, and I finished the semester because I was always taught to finish what you start. And I thought to myself, you know, I said, I feel sorry for these guys and the way they're treated out here, but these guys are here for a reason, many of them. So now some of them are probably incorrectly incarcerated. I agree with that. I believe there are a lot of people in jail who shouldn't be in jail. The sad part about it is, Austin, this is what happens in a society that is dealing with people who they can't control any longer. Now, I said all of that to say this, so you have my little memory lane with Teddy here today. Swedish man faces 2 years in prison for saying that Somalis have a low IQ. I'm not making this up. A 60-year-old man from Sweden who has been barraged with Somalis invading his country is facing 2 years in prison for posting a message on Facebook that reads, only one in every fifth Somalia have an IQ of over 70. The prosecutor claims that the post targets a protected group of people based on their national origin and therefore is hate speech. The case is yet another example of what has now been referred to as hate facts, statements that are true but don't have a positive policy towards the protected groups. Now, what's interesting... I've got a friend of mine named John Parvin. He's John Parvin. He's my attorney. He was my college roommate. Guy's an absolute genius, brilliant attorney. I mean, he's a good friend of mine, one of my best friends. And he has a son named Sam. Now, Sam basically has Down syndrome. And Sam's IQ has been tested, and he's a 79 with Down syndrome. And he's marginally functional. But he can get around a little bit on his own. But he has Down syndrome. Like, when he finishes eating at the table, if he likes the food, he will lick the plate. I mean, like a dog, he'll lick the plate. And when he comes to eat here, I don't say anything about it because I realize he has a 79 IQ. And so for Downs, that's actually pretty doggone high. And he says that the Somalians have a very low IQ. Now he's going to go to prison with it. So I went to the IQ research website. I actually did this, which is listed in this article. And I found out that Hong Kong has an average IQ of 108. Singapore, 108. Japan, 105. China, 105. Switzerland, 101. The United Kingdom, 100. The United States is at 99, which is okay. That's an okay IQ. That's fully functional. You get along well at 99. However, when you go all the way down here to Somalia and you look up what the IQ is in Somalia, it blows your mind. It blows your mind. Here we go. Niger is ranked with an average IQ of number 37 in the country, an average IQ of 69, which is 10 below Sam, the young man with Down syndrome. Angola is 68. Chad is 68. Somalia is 68. Swaziland is 68. Dominica is 67. Guinea is 67. Haiti is 67. Okay, we are not talking about people who are going to qualify for the Mensa Society, okay, which is the International Group of Geniuses. They're not getting in that, okay? Now you think, well, you're making fun of these people. No, I'm not. I'm not making fun of them. I'm going to just make a comment here and just going to tie this together. When you have millions of these people with IQs that are under 70 put into a population which has a rule of law that they never had with a 70 IQ or 69 IQ, and they're really not even functional and don't even know how to use a toilet, hard to teach them how to flush the handle, and they take a dump on the doggone sidewalk or in the middle of the street or in people's flower beds, you got a problem mixing those cultures. Because remember, a lot of these cultures are Muslim and they do a lot of inbreeding. And I remember John Moore was on our show a few years ago, Austin, and he talked about how these Muslims have these very low IQs from some of these third world countries, not all of them, that basically because they've been too much inbred, and that's why they can convince these guys with a 69 IQ on the average of the whole country to strap a suicide vest on. Now remember now, if you got 69 average, you got them down there in the 50s, and you got them up there in the 70s. You got them back and forth. You got a guy with a sub-60 IQ, sub-70 IQ, strap on a suicide vest, said, by the way, as soon as you push this little button right here in the middle of this vest or pull this little cord, you're going to find yourself in paradise with 60 virgins. You got 60 virgins coming your way right now as soon as you push that button. So I want you to run over there right now, get under those pylons of that building, and push that button, and you got your virgins. And all of a sudden, boom. These guys, 59 IQ, 69 IQ, they go, okay, I believe you, here we go. And they run over and they're all giddy. They push the button, boom, and no virgins. And what a mess. And the building comes down or the pylons are damaged. This is what we're dealing with. And again, so you're trying to integrate cultures with people who have different religious beliefs, different intellectual skills, that you're now you're dealing with a whole group of people who can't flush the toilet. So you're dealing with a whole bunch of stuff. For this guy to say that these guys have these low IQs, he was stating a fact, Austin, but it's hate crime in Sweden because they're so politically correct there that they're unwilling to accept what they've done and who they've brought into their country and what it's done as far as cultural genocide, suicide to their country. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it really is. And it's crazy that it's happening. And this is why I said a minute ago that it is being planned from the inside out. Because if this truly was an organic catastrophe that was going on. We saw the immigration from Syria, from Africa, and these people were just migrating up here because they really, truly did want to get away from the war-torn areas, which some of them do. Some of them do. Not all of them, but some of them. And they were coming into these areas. The government would be doing the best they could to not only maintain and manage the amount of them coming in, but they would also say, listen, if you want to come into this country, we're letting you know right now, I know you're trying to work with us right now, you're trying to get to a better place. If you don't follow our rule of law, we're basically going to handcuff you, detain you, we're going to put you back on a C-130 or whatever equivalent we have over here in Sweden or Europe, and we're going to take you back to the country you came from, and we're going to safely drop you off with a gallon of water and a bag of food, and you'll be able to go freely on your way back in your country. If you do this, this is what's going to happen. And as soon as they do it, they immediately go out. These guys, in some cases, probably are not very bright, as you just said. However, you start seeing thousands of these individuals, as soon as they commit a crime, get ejected from the country and get dropped off in their country of origin. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out 1 + 1 = 2. If I do this, these are the consequences. The problem is, Sweden isn't even coming close to doing that. Not only are they not doing this, they're going and criminalizing the very citizens that are the tax-paying, law-abiding citizens of that country by saying, if you even say something that's factual, if you can even back it up with research and numbers, it doesn't matter. We're still constituting that as what is called hate speech now, as we've seen in this country and Europe, and you're basically going to either be fined or in prison for hate speech. Not that it's fake news, not that it's inaccurate, but simply because you're saying something negative about somebody else. That is censorship at its clearest definition. Crazy stuff right now. Also, too, I wanted to give you guys a heads up on this. You guys have known I've talked about it before. The Fitbit trackers and a lot of the electronic devices people wear on their wrist. If you have something that you're trying to monitor for a specific period of time, like running or exercising, and you're wearing it for that, they can be a useful tool. Wearing them on a 24/7 basis, I'd never have recommended. I've talked about this in detail, and more reports now are coming out for even other reasons why you shouldn't do this. A, CBS2 has reported now that several Fitbit users have actually been shocked by their device while wearing it. Chris Nelson, one of the individuals, said he was putting his 3-year-old daughter to bed when a painful surge came from his Fitbit and shot up his arm. The shock reportedly caused him to drop his child. She, however, was unarmed. Nelson isn't alone. Numerous other reports have said suggested many others are experiencing the same thing. Lauren Reese said 2 different Fitbit gadgets gave her an electric shock at different times. Fitbit is blaming the shocks on static electricity. So, whatever. You take that for what it is. The cons of wearing fitness trackers, though, do not end with just an electric shock. That right there, enough to me, is I don't like any shock. I've been shocked before. I've done electric work. Getting shocked is not fun. I don't know anybody that's like, man, I really enjoy getting shocked. It just makes my day when I get a real random shock on my arm. Nobody says that. So that, take that for what it is. Secondly now, we talked about this repeatedly, about wireless trackers and EMF radiation. Cell phones put out the most amount of EMF radiation. These Fitbits don't put out a huge amount, but again, it's something that is literally mated to your body on your wrist in contact with you all day long. A lot of people that wear them all day. They wear them while they work out. They even wear them while they sleep so they can monitor their heart rate while they sleep, which, I mean, unless, like I said, you're monitoring it for a very specific health reason, like to see what your heart is doing because of an issue, that I can understand. Other than that, really doesn't make any sense. This is the thing that bugs me the most, is the psychological aspect about it. New studies now that have come out have shown that fitness trackers can ultimately become more like a tiny tyrant on your wrist. Data shows that while women may be more active and make healthier choices in some cases while wearing these wristbands, they also have a massive spike in negative feelings about themselves and the device. For example, on a survey, almost half of the women surveyed said that they felt completing activities when they were not wearing the device was a total waste, and they felt naked without their Fitbit. Even more alarming, however, in the survey was the fact that 59% of women felt their daily routine was controlled by their fitness tracker. This is bringing in the technology, the very technology that I warned everybody about, all the way from the smart houses to the Alexa to the 5G to everything we're starting to rely on. in making an electric gadget essentially be your lord and master to watch what you're doing, monitor what you're doing, tell you whether or not you're doing good, and give you affirmation whether or not you're doing good enough, to the point if you don't have it on or if you're not using it all the time, you feel like you're basically wasting your time exercising. Guys, I promise you, you don't need a Fitbit to exercise properly, nor do you need a Fitbit to stay in good shape. This is another one of those electronic tools that, again, can be very useful for a specific reason, but wearing one of these 24/7 and using an electronic gadget to essentially detail your daily life. And remember, almost all these things have trackers in them. They all monitor where you go and what you do. A lot of them now you can even speak to, meaning they have the smart speakers in them. Meaning what? They listen to what you say while you're wearing it. Think about this stuff, guys, before you put it on your body and you keep it around your body and make good decisions. This is why I wanted to bring this up today, because this stuff is becoming so prevalent in our world with all this smart technology, which in turn is really making us just dumb slaves in reality when we become so hooked on it we can't function without it, Dad.
Good article, Austin. By the way, Japan is actually out there exposing guards. Remember, Japan doesn't allow all of this information to come in their country, and they're in a negative population growth. They're basically going extinct. Over the last year, controversy with Japanese medical and political arenas over the HPV vaccine has touched the public at large, where they don't have these laws where they can't sue these guys. Through social media, highly publicized event, anti-vaccine groups have gained control of the narrative surrounding the HPV vaccine, and they're warning the girls in Japan not to use this product because of these horrible, horrible, debilitating side effects from the HPV vaccine, which again leads to the globalist fantasy game of controlling the planet and wiping out a huge percentage of the planet through eugenics by causing these girls to go into premature ovarian failure to make them so sick that they simply can't function. Guys, thank you so much for listening today. I love you guys, and I appreciate you. Thanks for spending the time with us. It's always great to hang out with you in the afternoons. You guys are awesome. Thanks for getting your multiple vitamins from us. Thanks for supporting us. Thanks for being here. We'll be on Hagman's show tomorrow night again, so we're going to look forward to that on Friday. God bless you guys. Had the awesome opportunity to pray for you again. So you guys are amazing to me. Thanks so much. Austin, I'll do the write-up, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Absolutely, man. There definitely, there's some crazy stuff going on right now. I mean, and we're doing the best we can, guys, to cover it in the short time span that we have. This is why I don't talk about a lot of the just drama that goes on with all the political theater that we're constantly seeing right now, because in my opinion, as we just discussed today and we showed you guys today, almost 90% of this is just ways to keep you obfuscated from the truth. So we appreciate your support, guys. Thank you for your time, thank you for your business, and thank you for being our friends and taking care of us at healthmasters.com. If you guys need anything at all, be sure, as always, to give us a call at Health Masters or email us 1-800-726-1834. The magnesium sports oil is product of the week, as it won yesterday. I didn't get to bring that up yesterday. It's on sale for over 10% off, and we have some other pretty popular products that are ready to be voted on right now on the website at healthmasters.com. So be sure to check those out. We appreciate you guys. We love you. Have a blessed, safe night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow, as always.